Well, good morning. Welcome to our roundtable panel for this Thursday, the 8th of January. And I will speak the obvious and say, as you know very well, it's cold. And so we're all bundled up together here in Studio A, ready to talk about a wide range of issues and starting off with some tragic circumstances. And we welcome your comments as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. You can also go to our website, WAMC.org/roundtable. You can comment there, and it's interactive, and everybody can see, and they can comment as well. And it's lots of fun. So do that. WAMC.org/roundtable. Let me introduce our panel, and then we'll get to our topics for today. First, WAMC's Alan Shartok is here. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. It was cold coming in this morning, and of course, I ate so much that I felt better this morning.
Good.
I'm so happy for you.
Could I just mention that I think both of you sounded awfully condescending with those remarks?
The ones we
you
just made?
Yes.
Or the ones we did yesterday?
You said good. You said just good.
We're just so happy for you.
Well, not really. I don't believe you to be.
Why not?
Because you sounded...
I'm happy that you were able to eat and have sustenance so you could be here.
Didn't all I do is introduce you? How was I condescending?
Right.
How'd you do? Is that what your mother used to say? How'd you do?
She said.
I did okay. How'd you do?
Daily Freeman publisher emeritus Ira Fussfeld is with us. Good morning, Ira.
Good morning. Nice to be back.
Nice to have you back. And Libby Post is with us. Good morning, Libby.
Good morning. Already
getting into it.
Oh, my God. I've been up so early. I had to bring my car in and, you know, did the trade with the car. It was just like too early, too cold, too dark.
All right. Well, good morning and
good
welcome,
morning.
And I'm glad you're here. An enormous manhunt going on in Paris on Wednesday for suspects that they say were involved in a brazen and methodical midday slaughter at a satirical newspaper that had lampooned Islam. The terrorists attacked by mass gunmen on the newspaper Charlie Hebdo left 12 people dead, including the top editor, prominent cartoonist, and police officer, and was among the deadliest in post-war France. The killers escaped, traumatizing the city and sending shockwaves through Europe and beyond. So what we know, there are two suspects that are still at large from what we know. Two of the suspects were brothers. And I believe the youngest of the suspects, the third suspect, an 18-year-old, captured, surrendered.
But I heard on the way in today, BBC saying it might not be
right.
He might not be involved at all. So
right. So
strange.
There's still questions, and obviously, there were just a moment ago. There was a moment of silence in throughout France, and throughout this country, and throughout the world. Cartoonists are taking to various platforms to support the ideals and of being able to express yourself artistically.
But some newspapers, Joe, I'm sorry to interrupt, but some newspapers are doing the exact opposite. They're printing some of the cartoons and then fading out some of the, Ira and I were just talking about this on the media project, fading out some of the offensive parts because we don't know why the because is, but Ira has a couple of theories.
Well, I suspect it's one of two things. Either they are afraid that the terrorists have won and that they've cowed them into not printing the images, but I think equally as likely, if not more likely, is that publications and broadcast outlets make determinations every day about what should be on their air or in their newspapers, and they have determined certain things are over the line. And it's entirely possible that these print outlets don't believe that it's right to publish cartoons or the kinds of things that are make fun of a religion even if the most radical interpretation of the religion. There may be, I use the example on the Media Project, a newspaper, a community newspaper, can print a picture of a fully nude person if they so choose, but most do not because they're afraid or they believe that it will offend the sensibilities of their readers or their viewers. So that could be just a decision that was made and would have been made had this tragedy not occurred. And the Daily News, which I believe is one that faded out the cartoons, under the normal course of doing business, would not have printed that cartoon. So we'll see. I mean, if it's the former, that it's because of fear, then the terrorists have won this round.
Okay, so what's going to happen as a result of this is now the next question. So now you have this thing happening, and it's so far above what we have really experienced. That what needs to be done now, I'm sure, according to most people in this world, will be to step it up a notch. Now, you know what that means. That's going to mean that the civil liberties of individuals are going to be dealt with. We know that what happened with Japan, we look back on that and say putting all of those people in camps was a terrible thing. Korematsu versus the United States and all the rest, it was a terrible thing. We look back on it and we say it. But I'm guaranteeing you that there is going to now be an outpouring of people who say we have to be protected and we cannot allow this to happen.
The thing about a couple of thoughts going back to the cartoons, and then I want Libby to weigh in on this as well, but. You know, there have been so many sources. I don't know about your Facebook feed or your Twitter feeds, but mine have just been inundated with various cartoons that have been printed around the globe. Also, the other thing that I've heard is that some of the comments, not comments, but some of the things that were I saw one article, and I forget the source, where the cartoons that had been edited and had been faded out was because they were in another language and they didn't know what it meant. Because they didn't have a translator at that time, and that's why they took it out. But, you know, I don't know. Libby.
Well, I don't want us to turn into Islamophobes, and that is the path that we go down. If we start abridging everyone's civil rights, I think we need to be careful and do more as much as we can in what the NSA and the FBI and the CIA doing what they do best, you know, to monitor folks and make sure that this something like this doesn't happen. But you know what? Something like this is going to happen because these folks think that God's on their side. And so did Hitler. And when people think God's on their side, that's it. That's the end of the conversation. Until you can change the headset of more and more people to say, no, this isn't what our God is about. You know, this isn't what Islam is about. This isn't what any kind of radical religious thought is about. This isn't what God wants us to do. But, you know, when people think God's on their side, and if they do this and then they go and they're going to be greeted by a bevy of women in the afterlife, you know, it's a little hard to fight that when this life is a life that they don't want to be in. They don't want to be in a pluralistic society. They think our existence is a threat to their religious freedom.
So you referred to Hitler, mm-hmm. Appropriately so, in terms of his feeling that he was not wrong in any way.
That's right.
And how did we end that whole thing?
Well, we went to war.
Yeah, but the difference is that Hitler represented a nation state, and it was the more traditional means of combating the enemy. And in this case, as has often been said, is that you've got 1 billion Muslims, and even if a relatively small number of them come under the heading of extreme terrorist types, they are not just in the Middle East anymore. They're all over the world.
And so
it makes it more difficult.
There's this sense from ISIS and Al Qaeda, go out and do whatever you want, just as long as you kill
people. Right.
Well,
they're encouraging it.
Well,
right.
Yes, but of course, ISIS now is approaching statehood itself, and that is one. If it can be determined, and I think it will be, that ISIS is behind this, then I think that you're going to see an outrage and a and a mobilization unlike anything you have seen up until now. And yes, if it means that there are individuals who would do harm to the nation states like France or the United States, I think it's going to get picked up. And the unfortunate part of that is good people will also get hurt there.
Oh, you know, France is one of those countries where there's been hot debate as to whether or not women can wear the scarves,
sure.
whether you can even
it's
wear
secular.
Any kind of religious, you know, if I could wear my Jewish star there or someone can wear a cross. And, you know, the thing is that ISIS becoming a state or gaining some kind of statehood doesn't mean that they're going to start living by the diplomatic and Western concept rules mm-hmm. of what it means to be a nation state.
No.
But when whether it's a nation state, it's sort of it still feels like it's self-controlled. It's us against them.
We have a real enemy.
Yeah, I don't remember. I wasn't alive, but I don't remember reading about during the period of Hitler there being Nazis who were on the attack in this country.
And there certainly were spies.
Right.
Spies, but
country.
Not people who would come in and shoot
people. And
there
were certainly Japanese spies in this country, and there certainly were German
spies.
But they didn't do violence.
Well, they tried. They landed on Long Island, and they had their stuff with them. They made fools of themselves, but they got caught. But they certainly were recruited to do harm here. No, I think that your point, Ira, was that in the past, or Libby's, that it was not, and these were not nation states, that it was tough to deal with individuals. ISIS now sees itself as a nation state. And there is it to me.
Yeah, and I don't know if there's a distinction that has to be made. I honestly don't know, but I haven't heard ISIS's name mentioned regarding this attack.
Oh, yeah.
I've heard Al-Qaeda in Yemen.
No, it has been. It has been mentioned. It's been positive.
Nobody has taken responsibility.
That's what it was. Well, you had the Arab groups, the major Arab groups saying this was a terrible thing and it shouldn't have happened because they can see around this corner, too.
Let's take a break. We'll come back and we'll talk just a bit more about this, read some letters, and then we'll go to a news break and get the latest from the BBC. Alan Chartok, Ira Fussfeld, Libby Post, I'm Joe Donahue. We'll be right back.
Support comes from Binghamton University, committed to preparing students for careers by striving to foster curiosity, growth, and discovery. Binghamton.edu. And Saratoga Bridges, Ballston Spa, New York, a community resource for people with disabilities and their families, supported employment, day services, and more. SaratogaBridges.org.
Good morning. Welcome back to our discussion. Just a few minutes before we go to a news break, and we have some letters that we would like to share with you, Alan.
Yeah. Well, Julius, our old friend, says, God is on our side, ? Agree with Alan about a new wave of Islamophobia, and Peter King will probably lead the charge in New York. Libby, don't forget that many folks in this country, the many folks in this country who think that, quote, God is on our side.
I know. There are plenty of people. There are plenty of people who think that God is on their side, and they're the folks who usually want to deprive everybody else of their rights.
I'll read it, but I have some trouble with it. It's from Gary, who says, panel, let's not automatically assume that the carnage in France was caused by Islamic terrorists. Let's think who would profit from more fear and hatred. Whomever carried this attack certainly looked like the highly trained paramilitary troops such as Blackwater. This is so far off the ball for me.
That is insane.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't use the word insane
because
I want to insult
anyone. Off the mark. How's that?
Yeah. And Tom says, we had our own Bund during the 30s in support of Hitler in Germany. See Lindbergh. Okay. And Deborah says, the murderers of the journalists, staff, and police officers in Paris had the freedom, if they chose, to verbally express their disagreement and disapproval with Charlie Hebdo. Tragically, they chose the cowardly act of murder. In my view, the peaceful, lawful protests in New York City, Ferguson, and around the country were expressing their free speech rights. I thought, though, that I could be wrong, that one of the jobs of our police was to protect lawful demonstrators' free speech rights. And Jack says, the Charlie attack and a few others of similar character tend to focus us on Islamic extremists, but the real issue is extremism of all kinds. Don't forget the Tim McVeighs and Brooke Goldsteins, or Gold or something, it says here, and skinheads and et cetera. Religions of all kind has been and continues to be right up to this minute a force. And don't forget the Hindu-Muslim riots in India, kind of perennial favorites, and that's from Jack. And Jeff says, I think Jeff says, I'm so tired of hearing people criticize and express disgust in Sony and the magazine in France, which I won't try to spell. I heard a WMC commentator say, what would the world do or think we're what would the world do, parenthesis Sony, think we're living in? From what I understand, the free world, not Fahrenheit 451, ban a movie, ban a book, ban a statement, where would it lead? And Jason said, hi, it was always my understanding that Hitler wanted to promote an atheist state, no invocation of God's will. And Steve says, I don't know what Steve said, but it's not what we...
I don't think we have time for
yes,
Steve.
Yes, oh, thank you.
Okay, so we'll have time for Steve on the other side of our break. We'll take that, and we'll be back. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org and WAMC.org/roundtable. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to our roundtable panel. Alan Chartok, Ira Fussfeld, Libby Post, and we welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. And I think we got caught up on the letters.
Pretty much. And Jason said something I considered when we were talking about Hitler's belief in God as being on his side. Jason says, hi, it was always my understanding that Hitler wanted to promote an atheist state, no invocation of God's will.
You read that.
Yeah, I mean, Libby made reference to something about this country that has long troubled me, and that is each time a president concludes a speech, it's always God bless America, that you know those kinds of threads are throughout the public discourse in this country, and we purport to be a country that is not going to let God get in the way of our business.
Yeah, well, in God we trust, you know, and... And we all say the pledge, which
each session of Congress opens
with the prayer.
Right.
Yeah. You know, and the line between the separation of church and state is getting thinner and thinner, based on what I said before, because people think that freedom of religion means freedom to discriminate, and it really just infringes on everything.
The Muslim religion is so diffuse in moderate leadership as to be rendered pointless, says Bonnie. Where's their silent majority answer everywhere in the world and thus far ineffectual in addressing the vipers in their own nest? And Bonnie said that, and she's right. I mean, many Muslim folks and organizations and Arab organizations have risen to denounce what's going on here. Maybe because it's worth denouncing, and maybe because they realize that the pushback is going to be something awful.
We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. And we will we welcome your comments on this issue and other issues that we're going to discuss this morning as well. Let's move on to those other issues. We'll talk about the we've talked about this a lot about abortion clinics in Texas. So the Texas abortion clinic rules now tested in appeals court. Lawyers for abortion clinics squared off with 10 state attorneys in a federal appeals court on Wednesday, arguing over the constitutionality of stringent abortion clinic rules that would force more than half the remaining abortion providers in Texas to close. But more is at stake than whether large portions of South and West Texas will be left with no abortion clinics, forcing some women to drive hundreds of miles for an abortion for safety reasons that doctors and clinic owners call a pretense. The case argued here, along with others arising from the hundreds of abortion restrictions adopted by more than half of the states in recent years, poses issues that are likely to end up before the Supreme Court in the next year or two. Many legal experts say, with the potential for significant effects on the ability of women to obtain abortions in much of the country. So there is that issue about travel. And the specific line in the there was a great story on NPR last night about this, of the language of talking about what the travel is and what is an undue burden and mm-hmm. so forth. So, but it is obviously, as the Times covered points out, seems destined for the Supreme Court once again.
Yes, it is. But what's so oxymoronic to this whole conversation is the women that they are going to put into the most risk of not being able to have access to reproductive freedom and abortion services and control over their own body are poor women, okay? Poor women, Hispanic women, not women without access to cars to be able to drive them someplace where they need to go. And then so they're forcing these women to have children who are going to end up on public assistance because these are poor women who don't have resources, and then they're going to go and cut the public assistance because that's what they want to do, you know? And so they're just forcing a cycle of poverty to continue that makes absolutely no sense, all in the guise of their version of what God is and what their interpretation of what God wants.
So now let's try to get inside the minds of the five basically right-wing justices on the court, on the Supreme Court. We know that when it comes to economic issues or to voting issues that would repress Democrats, there's no question of where they are. But on this one, it's interesting because there are at least one of them, Kennedy, who is mm-hmm. often, not always, the swing vote and who is a libertarian. And whether libertarianism in this case means anybody should be able to say and get in anybody's face anytime, or whether it means a woman should be allowed to deal with her own body is something that we have to see. I mean, I think the one thing that Roberts showed us in his passage, basically, of Obamacare is that there's just so far that they're willing to go without causing social chaos. So I'm trying to get inside their minds to figure out what they're going to do on this.
Well, again, we just spoke about it with the last subject, and Libby alluded to it. The underlying piece to this entire puzzle is religion and the view on the extreme right, and in states like Texas, or at least four, if not five, of the justices of the Supreme Court, that their interpretation of God's will or of the Bible is what should hold sway here. And I don't know how we can get that to be removed from the discussion, because is there any number of other examples, death penalty? I mean, who knows? You can name a hundred of them. It offends me as someone who, although I belong to an organized religion, I'm not a particularly religious person, but I don't want to impose my religion on anybody else.
Well, I am a particularly religious person. I'll say I'm attentive. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm an attentive Jew.
But you're not telling people not to drink milkshake with a hamburger.
Right. I don't impose my beliefs on anybody else. And that's what living in a pluralistic society is about. You don't impose your own religious beliefs. Now, I don't like proselytizing. I think I find it offensive. And people need to live their lives as they need to live them, and that's fine. But I can tell you this. The radical Christian right in this country, and we're seeing it over and over and over again, especially with more states allowing marriage, our mere existence, lesbians and gays, and our mere existence and being now sort of first-class citizens, to them is being, they interpret that as an inability to believe and engage in their religious practices.
Libby.
It's true, Alan.
No. You just said a lot, and I just wanted to respond, if I might, for a moment.
Sure.
And that is that Jewish population in this country, which you are, is about 2%. When you're in the minority, you expect and hope that the society will protect the rights of minorities. Mm-hmm. When you're in the majority, there's a whole other psychological dimension to it. And I think that we should recognize that, because when it comes to the Muslim population, we heard from one person here is who said Jim, who says when a wacko wacko preacher in Florida threatened to burn the Quran or some American troops in Afghanistan accidentally burned some, thousands of Muslims on the street around the world rioted and many people died. I'm concerned that while many Muslim governments have condemned terrorist actions, Muslims on the street have been mostly quiet. Is there an underlying support for such terrorist actions by many Muslims in the street? Says Jim. I hope not. And of course, I hope not too.
Mm-hmm.
I think we all hope not. And I am sure that there will be those who've come to this country who want to live in peace in this country, who recognize full well that they're in the minority, and full well what will come when all hell breaks loose around here, and who want no part of this, right? But I'm saying to you, your view of, and quite correct of what a minority should be expect in this country is right, but you have to also take into consideration the fact that majorities are the most dangerous of all.
No kidding. Just look at Ferguson.
Sure.
I mean, it just, look at Ferguson. Look at the Eric Garner case. We are, right now, we're still, white people are still the majority in this country, and we certainly have the political majority and the political power. And so we do things that we think are just fine because it benefits us, but it doesn't necessarily benefit people of color or poor people or people without means.
Which is why you want to keep your eye on the Supreme Court, by the way.
Absolutely.
But, you know, the point that you raised about whether the majority of Muslims who are being silent thus agree with what the terrorists again, I don't want to trivialize it, but isn't there a history of that in any number of arenas? For example, when the mafia was in our neighborhoods, most of the Italian Americans in this country were not members of the mafia, but how many of them were afraid to speak out because of their fear of retribution?
Sure.
How many people in the inner city when you had the drug dealers and the gangs on every block, as depicted in The Wire, for example, how many of the God-fearing citizens were afraid to speak up?
And during McCarthyism,
right?
Think of all the people who hated McCarthy's guts, and I knew lots of them, but who were afraid to open their mouths because they were afraid they were next.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, the Islamic terrorists are the bullies, and people eventually, it seems, stand up to the bullies. But in many places, it's not occurring, and or they don't know how to stand up to them yet to be effective.
Let's take a break. We'll come back and have a bit of a palate cleanser. We'll talk about other topics.
Okay, fine.
We'll
try sherbet?
Sherbet.
Yes, a little sherbet.
Let's talk about sherbet.
Right.
Okay.
Well, orange, please.
Excellent. The orders are in. We'll be back after this short break.
Support comes from Wild Birds Unlimited Nature Shop, Saratoga Springs, New York, providing nature gifts, bird seed, bird feeders, and more to help create a backyard refuge. WBU.com/Saratoga Springs. And the ADK Cafe, a delicious kitchen in Keene, New York, serving home-cooked breakfast, lunch, and dinner every day. TheADKCafe.com.
All right, the sherbet is being served. Good morning. Welcome back to our roundtable panel. Alan Shartok is here. Ira Fussfeld is with us as well. Libby Post in, and I'm Joe Donahue. We welcome your comments. Roundtable@WAMC.org. Roundtable@WAMC.org. And so I thought this was an interesting story in the paper We'll go back to politics in a second, but this is the front page of both the Washington Post and the New York Times this morning. A new class of antibiotic found in dirt could prove resilient to resistance, with bacteria evolving to resist antibiotics faster than scientists can concoct new drugs. Mm. The fight against resistant infections in hospitals and food supplies is a tough battle to win, but a newly discovered antibiotic may prove irresistible to bacteria.
For some.
Yes. Every time an antibiotic is used, bacteria are getting to know it a little better, and eventually they develop methods to fight it. But because of its unique method of action, this new antibiotic could keep working for longer than any other before bacteria even started to get wise, maybe even longer than 30 years. This was a study published Wednesday in Nature. And
I say good luck to them, and good luck to all of us, every one of us. On this bacterial thing, because we know that we've been facing real problems. But then the first thing that I start to think of is big pharma, you know, and who puts the stuff out there, number one, although this is a very prestigious group of people who published this. But I also wonder about all those things, Joe, that we hear for the first time in a newspaper somewhere, that this is happening or that's happening, and then we never, ever hear about it again.
Well, they say,
I've often wondered about that.
They say 4 years from your medicine cabinet if everything goes smoothly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the big question.
Well, I'm going to get me one of those kits that the bubble boy used in Seinfeld and build myself an isolation chamber and never breathe any air again. Because, you know, you read a story like this and you just sort of throw up your hands.
Or remember Howard Hughes. How could we forget him in the end of that movie?
But to – this is true. But to come up with something that will fight MRSA with a longer shelf life and even pneumonia – given the incidence of it, is a great thing. And you know what I find fascinating is this: the notion that there are these smart bacteria out there who can mutate and change as a response to the antibiotics. I find it fascinating. You know, when we think we're the only ones with a brain who can change, here we have these little microbes that are doing it all on their own, and they're the essence, the building blocks.
Antimicrobials.
Yeah, it's just, I find that part of this fascinating.
And they come from dirt in Maine.
Right. Well, good Maine stock.
Let's move to Maine.
I'm sure the cold has something to do with that,
probably,
don't you think?
Probably. But, you know, look, yes, big pharma is a problem with all of this, but and I'm not saying we need to be kept alive until we're 145, because I don't think that's good either.
But we will be.
Yeah, but to be able to fight some of these infections, I mean, MRSA is a scourge
terrible.
In hospitals.
Terrible.
It really is.
Which is one of the reasons that in the old days, oh, take a few more days in the hospital, but now get out.
Right. Get out quick.
And in these tests, I believe I'm pronouncing this correctly, but it's Tyxobactin.
Mm-hmm.
Tyxo. Is the drug.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. The antibiotic.
And
so it obliterated MRSA and drug-resistant TB in cell cultures and in mice and did so without any signs that the bacteria might become resistant to it. So, and this is key. I always love this article, this part of the article when they say this. And it didn't kill the mice.
Right.
You're like, all right, well, that's good news.
Right.
I want to know that.
Yeah, it's true.
There will be somebody before they do who writes us a note and say, you keep getting on Big Pharma's case, you know, you have to understand that Big Pharma has saved a lot of lives in this country. It's true, but at what price?
And well, we could go on about that, but let's not.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to the other story, which is Elizabeth Warren, certainly making is becoming very outspoken has been outspoken, obviously, but is becoming more outspoken, even in the sort of as an antidote to what the president is saying as well. And it's interesting. I've been noting that this has been an article in many different papers over the last several days, beginning on Sunday, I believe. And so as President Obama is seeking to convince Americans that the economy is back on track, Elizabeth Warren delivered a major address Wednesday in which she argued that average Americans are being left behind because Washington has failed them. She made the speech before the AFL-CIO in Washington and ticked off a list of upbeat indicators, but says the overall picture doesn't tell us much about what's happening at ground level to tens of millions of Americans.
Right, she is.
You know, there was it was either in this story or in another thing that I read recently about how the middle class was so much stronger when the unions were stronger. And what we're finding now is the middle class is dependent on so many non-union employers for their employment. And so there's no collective bargaining, there's no strength in wages anymore, and we're not getting what we need to be able to live worthwhile lives from a monetary point of view. And I think the interesting thing here is the balancing act that whoever is going to be the Democratic nominee, and it's presumptively Hillary Clinton, is going to have to walk, because this country is a centrist country no matter what. That's how it always comes down.
Right.
And so while Elizabeth Warren gets our, you know, Occupy folks all riled up and would get them to vote, that's not what's going to win
Libby
for the Democrats.
Which Libby is why we need her.
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
In other words, you need somebody at that group who is pushing, and who, by the way, is absolutely right.
And who can make an argument coherently and succinctly without hysteria, which is really very important.
But if she were to run against Hillary Clinton, that would be dysfunctional.
Yes.
But
it
the
would
fact that
undermine
she's pushing Obama, that she's pushing Clinton, mm-hmm. that's all good.
So does it say to you as a political observer that she does not have her sights set on the White House because she understands what I think you're both trying to say, which is she's not centrist enough get elected in a general election?
She does understand it, and not yet. I think, pardon me, she could give Hillary a hell of a run for her money in some of these primaries because so few people vote. But I think she knows she can't win the election.
Right.
So then plotting it out, how if she is taking these left of center positions, some would say far left of center positions, has she made peace with herself that she will never be the president and she feels that this is her role in life?
Not having entrance through her
right.
earlobe
well,
to
I'm
her mind.
Well, I'm asking for your opinion.
No, I think... Look, if you're a politician and you really want change, then you do what you can to get elected to the head office. But I think she's not likely to see that right now. Whether I would exclude her from doing it in the future is another whole story.
Meanwhile, back in Washington, Democrats were adjusting grudgingly to their reduced role in the Senate on Wednesday, according to the New York Times, displaying some surliness and a lot of suspicion while making the case that they would not be silent or passive players in the new Republican-controlled Congress. In so quickly assuming the role of the aggressors on only the second day of the session, Democrats struck a discordant tone when compared with Republican pleas for greater bipartisan cooperation.
Isn't it funny how it works both ways? When the Republicans, when the Democrats are in control, they're asking for bipartisan, help. When the Republicans are in control, they're asking for bipartisan help. But the fact is that the Democrats get nothing by rolling over and playing dead. And they know that. And they're doing the right thing from their perspective.
But why do they need to be speaking in such terms so early into the new Congress? It seems to me the onus is on the Republicans to see if they can govern. Why should the Democrats blatantly show their defiance at a time when they don't have to? They can be the statesmen, at least right now.
In all honesty, Ira, I would disagree with you. I think they do have to. I think they have to show that they're a force. I think they have to show that they're protecting the American middle class and that they have to really be out there and give them hell, Harry, if they're going to survive at all. Otherwise, they're going to look like a bunch of words you can't use on the radio. I'm searching very carefully, but wusses.
Well, I think they have to do all that you said. I just don't think they have to do it on day two. The onus, as I said, is on the Republicans right now.
What better day than the first day? When Mitch McConnell is coming on the air and saying, okay, we want you to cooperate. And the way you cooperate with us is by allowing the pipeline and by allowing no middle class relief. I mean, it's crazy.
Harry Reid blamed Republicans for making the Senate a dysfunctional body when they were in the minority and said Democrats would not allow the same path. He issued a statement yesterday saying, I have no intention of just rolling over. I can't. The mistakes of the past, the gratuitous obstruction and wanton filibustering will not be a hallmark of the 114th Congress.
Don't work out.
I was just going to allude to that. Just to show the snarkiness and on and on and on, I saw a guy on Fox News Channel the other day in reference to Harry Reid's accident and the eye
patch. He broke his arm, for those of you who don't know.
He sort of suggested without saying, oh, he says this is how it happened.
Oh, yeah. Can you imagine?
I mean, as opposed to, well, maybe he had a couple of drinks and fell down a flight of stairs.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
That, I mean, this is the level of discourse
this
in our country.
This isn't nice.
Yeah, but didn't Democrats do the same thing when Bush choked on the pretzel?
Don't like it.
Or when George Pataki got hit by the frozen chicken.
And then you wonder why the electorate is so cynical and why the public is so cynical.
Right. I have to say from, you know, my visual perspective on things, when I look at it from a branding, the GOP's new graphic of America's new Congress is using a similar but not exactly the same type style as Obama's
campaign
stuff.
Yeah, it looks like Obama yes. bumper sticker.
Right. So they're finally getting with the program that the visual really does make a difference. Here we have a president who is surging because he's being the president and doing what he's supposed to do. And now from a visual point of view, which means a lot for people, unconsciously, is using graphics that look like Obama's graphics. I find that sort of fascinating.
Yeah. Can I just, in 1 second then, Joe, throw out something? I got a letter this morning from a member of our workforce who mentioned, and I have no idea how this is, that New York State is being rebranded with a whole new brand on every truck and every house and everything else.
And Encon is having a coronary.
Yes, and that they're going to have to spend millions of dollars, I'm told, to do this at a time when we're told there isn't enough money. If anybody knows about this, we'd sure love to know about it here at WAMC.
Well, there was a story that broke that I saw somewhere about the folks at Encon not being happy.
Yeah.
And I actually talked to somebody yesterday whose husband works at Encon.
Right.
You know, they're not allowed to use anything with the old logos on it. Well, for the foresters or the people who work outside at Encon and they have their hats and their jackets and their sweaters and it's all branded to Encon and it's an old logo, 125
years old. Wasn't there a story that the governor was the only one who could decide to use it appropriately?
Yeah, you know, so it's going to be interesting and it's going to be expensive.
Yeah.
It's going to be really expensive.
There was a branding Bible that was released at the beginning of the month.
That
came out. And
right.
Education has to be orange. Public safety is gray. The governor's seal is
How much did that study cost?
Well, we talked about it. It cost millions. They hired one of the biggest firms in the country to do their study to come back with a very simple
I wonder who they gave
concept.
Money to.
The people on Madison Avenue and the big corporations will say it's money well spent.
And, sure.
And we are out of time.
Ooh.
But thank you all very much.
Thank you
Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back.